Now we're ready to begin into chapter 9. In this chapter, the first few verses are devoted to really explaining to the people just why God was going to do what he was going to do. And then the latter majority of the chapter is devoted to telling them how they had turned against God, how they'd been a disobedient, rebellious, stiff-necked people. So beginning in the first verse, "Hear, O Israel, thou art to pass over Jordan this day, to go in to possess nations greater and mightier than thyself, cities great and fenced up to heaven." Now he's reminding Israel of what's imminently going to happen. You're going to pass over Jordan. He says this day. I don't know if it means literally this day or if it means in the very, very near future. It was within a matter of a few days of the whole book of Deuteronomy that this happened. And he says you're to go in to possess nations greater and mightier than thyself. As we think of the Israelites conquering this land of Canaan, we think of a small nation doing great things against the force and will of mightier nations. And as we think of that, then we also are reminded how that we as individuals, as we fight the good fight of faith, how that we come up against obstacles that are greater and mightier than ourselves. But if it's God's will for us to conquer those obstacles, we will and we can do it. We certainly can do it. Regardless of what the problem is. Whether it's a weakness that we have to lie or to steal or to cheat. Whether it's a weakness that we have to be involved with some kind of a drug or some kind of a company of people that are the wrong people. Whether it's a weakness that we have to not want to get along when the time comes for us to be able to get along with somebody. Whatever it is, these are obstacles that may seem to be greater than ourselves, but we can conquer them if it's what God wants us to do. So he said, you're going in to possess nations greater and mightier than ourselves, cities great and fenced up to heaven, which means these cities were well fortified. They had tall walls around them, walls which he described as being fenced up to heaven. Now, you know, if that were literally true, it's a figurative statement, but if it were literally true that they were fenced up to heaven, it'd be impossible to get over the wall. A people great and tall, the children of the Anakims. Now, these Anakims were giants, and they had a reputation for being a group of people that were impregnable. They could not be conquered. You know, when the spies went over into the land 40 years before and spied out the land, they saw these giants. That was enough for them. 10 of them came back and reported, we cannot take the land. And so now they're going into that very same land. These same people are still there. Anakims are still there. The ones that they had been so terrified of a few years before are still there. And so he says, a great and tall people, the children of the Anakims, whom thou knowest, and of whom thou hast heard say, who can stand before the children of Anak? That was the cry. Who can stand before these people? Understand therefore this day, that the Lord thy God is he which goeth over before thee. As a consuming fire, he shall destroy them, he shall bring them down before thy face, so shalt thou drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord has said unto thee. Now what he's telling them here is that the Lord is going to be with them. The true living God of heaven, the Lord thy God, is going to lead you into battle. He's going to be with you in this time of battle, and he is going to destroy them before thy face. So shalt thou drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord has said unto thee. It's not going to be one of these long, prolonged battles. You can do it quickly if you've got the Lord working with you. Now, this next verse to me is a most interesting principle. Speak not in thine heart, after that the Lord thy God hath cast them out from before thee, saying, for my righteousness the Lord hath brought me in to possess this land. But for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord doth drive them out from before thee. Now don't say that he's doing all this because I'm righteous. But it's because of their wickedness that he's doing, that he's driving them out. In other words, if these people in Canaan had been righteous people, he wouldn't have driven them out. And he didn't drive them out because he had some more righteous people coming in to take their place. He drove them out because they were wicked. So the next verse, not for thy righteousness or for the uprightness of thy heart dost thou go into possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now this to me is really a very important principle. God does not bring about any harm to anyone because somebody else around is righteous. And because of their righteousness, he's going to bring harm to somebody else. You can be in the presence of the people that are the most righteous ever, and their righteousness will never bring about harm to you. The thing that brings about harm is your wickedness. And he spells it out very plainly. Do not say that God's going to drive these people out because of my righteousness. Oh, look how good I am. He's going to drive them out so good me can have their land. It's because of their wickedness that he drove them out. And so today, it's very comforting to know that in the church, in the world, in the universe, there's room for as many righteous people as there possibly can be made righteous. It's not a matter of saying, well, because he is so righteous, I'm going to have to suffer. You stand on your own deeds. You're judged on your deeds, not somebody else's. If you're righteous, you get the credit for it. If another person's righteous, you don't suffer because he's righteous. God doesn't take away from you because he's righteous. That's the principle I get here. But there, of course, there's another really underlying thought too, and that is the people who were going in really were not righteous people. The Israelites were not righteous people. What he had was a combination of two things. One is the people in Canaan were so wicked they didn't deserve to live there any longer. And two, the people who were going in were the offspring of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, with whom he'd made a covenant that he would give them this land, or give them their offspring this land. So the fulfilling of the covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the weakness of the people in Canaan were the two forces then that caused this to come about. Not because these people here were righteous people. Now, true, they were the children of God. And true, God did do all that he possibly could to help them. But they were also a rebellious and stiff-necked people. Now, they might have been the most obedient people in the world, when you compare them with all the other nations. I doubt that there was any other nation that God would say this nation is a more obedient and more righteous nation than these people are. But these people fell so far short that they could not be counted as righteous people. So he says in verse 5, not for thy righteousness or for the uprightness of thine heart dost thou go into possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand, therefore, that the Lord thy God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for thy righteousness, for thou art a stiff-necked people. That's very plain, very emphatic. Don't let anybody get the idea that you're such a good person, that God is going to do this bad thing to these other people because you are so good. That's not the reason at all. He makes that plain and emphatic here. For thou art a stiff-necked people. As I understand this word stiff-necked, it comes originally from the idea of an oxen working in a yoke. And when an oxen would not cooperate and submit to the yoke and work there like he should, then he was looked upon as being a stiff-necked animal because he would not let his neck fit into the yoke. And that figure then is passed on to a rebellious people, a people that do not want to submit to God, do not want to submit to God's will. They are the stiff-necked people. Now, the rest of this chapter is devoted to telling them about their great primary sin of building the golden calf while Moses was getting the covenant on Mount Sinai. And he goes into some laborious detail about it. I mean, we're not going to be able to cover it all in this session, but we will get into to what we can of that part of the teaching. Verse 7. Remember, and forget not, how thou provokest the Lord thy God to wrath in the wilderness. Now, you know, sometimes our past deeds are so grievous that we would like to have God just completely wipe them out of his book of remembrance. It would like for it to be as though it never happened, but it can never actually be as though it never happened. So he tells us here, remember and forget not how thou provokest the Lord thy God to wrath in the wilderness. Just remember how you did this. Remember how it all came about. And sometimes by remembering what's happened in the past, it prevents this same thing or a similar thing from happening again in the future. We learn by history. This is the very reason we study the Old Testament, because these things are written for our learning, that we, through patience and hope of the Scriptures, might achieve then to a point of higher learning and satisfaction to God. These are written for our learning. We try to profit by other people's mistakes. From the day that thou didst depart out of the land of Egypt, until you came unto this place, ye have been rebellious against the Lord. Now that's quite an all-sweeping, indicting statement that Moses is making there. From the day you came out of Egypt, not just the sin of Mount Sinai and these other sins, from the day you came out of Egypt until this day right here, it says, you've been rebellious against the Lord. Now as we talk about idolatry being a bad sin, which it is, let us also not forget that it seems to be inbred within man to also have this tendency to be rebellious. Wants to be rebellious. Even from a little baby on up. You start to correct a little baby, and as soon as he gets into that state where he can be a little bit negative, he wants to start hitting back and saying no and getting angry because he's been corrected. And this spirit stays in man. And this is a spirit that we have to conquer and not be a rebellious people against the Lord. So he says from the first day to the last day, you've been a rebellious people. Also in Horeb, you provoked the Lord to wrath so that the Lord was angry with you to have destroyed you. Horeb, of course, is the place that we know as Mount Sinai. That's the place where they received the Ten Commandments, the place where God spoke to them from the fire, the place where Moses went up. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. He received the tables of stone, but when he came down, they had built a golden calf. Moses says that he was angry with you to have destroyed you. And we're going to see the details of that a little bit more as we go through the chapter. God was ready to have destroyed you right there. When I was gone up into the mount to receive the tables of stone, even the tables of the covenant which the Lord made with you, then I abode in the mount 40 days and 40 nights. I did neither eat bread nor drink water. And the Lord delivered unto me two tables of stone written with the finger of God. And on them was written according to all the words which the Lord spake with you in the mount out of the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly. As we recall, they had this great assembly before this mount. There was fire, there was smoke, there was quaking, there was noises, and he calls it the day of the assembly. And God was in the midst of that fire. He spoke to the people. The people were so terrified and so frightened at it that they didn't want to hear anymore. They wanted Moses to hear and then let Moses relay what God had to say. Well, after he finished those speakings, then Moses went up on the mount. He fasted 40 days and 40 nights. He didn't eat nor drink water, and he received then the two tables of the covenant written with the finger of God. And he says an interesting thing. He says, on them was written according to all the words which the Lord spake with you in the mount out of the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly. Now we know that God bound to have said more than just what was on those two tables of stone, but those two tables of stone were the Ten Commandments which so successfully condensed all the principles of God that he could hear say that there was written all the things that God spoke. And we know that that's true. The first four commandments have to do with the worship to God, man's duty to God. The last six commands have to do with man's duty to man. And as Paul was talking in Romans, he named some of those last six commands, and he said, "For being the other thing is briefly comprehended in the same, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." So whatever our relation, our duty is, it's found in those Ten Commandments in essence. Have no other gods before me, not to take the Lord's name in vain, and so on. And the Lord delivered unto me two tables of stone. That's verse 10. Verse 11. And it came to pass at the end of 40 days and 40 nights that the Lord gave me the two tables of stone, even the tables of the covenant. And the Lord said unto me, "Arise, get thee down quickly from hence, for thy people which thou hast brought forth out of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They are quickly turned aside out of the way which I commanded them. They have made them a molten image." This people, God now says, "Thy people which thou hast brought forth out of Egypt." God didn't even want to take credit for having done anything with this people. It's Moses' people now. He said, "They have corrupted themselves." And simply by building this calf and by turning and forgetting about God, they corrupted themselves. "They are quickly turned aside out of the way which I commanded them." Got to give them some commands. And they had quickly, he says, quickly turned aside out of the way. 40 days and 40 nights. They quickly turned aside out of the way. They have made them a molten image. "Furthermore, the Lord spake unto me, saying, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people." That's what God's remark about them. It's a stiff-necked people. They do not want to yield to me. They do not want to be submissive. They do not want to fit into the yoke. They're not my servants. It's a stiff-necked people. "Let me alone, that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven, and I will make of thee a nation mightier and greater than they." That was God's first thought. Just let me blot them out from under heaven. There will be no more remembrance of these people. We'll blot them out. Their names won't even be remembered or anything. Nothing about these people. I'll destroy them. "And I make of thee," talking about Moses, "I make of thee a nation mightier and greater than they." That was what the Lord wanted to do as a result of their having been saved.